RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Scott Lawson is the owner of True Earth Certified Organic Blueberries in the Hawke's Bay. With over 30 seasons under his belt, he's also on the boards of OANZ, Organic Aotearoa New Zealand, and the Hawke's Bay Future Farming Trust. And we've invited Scott onto the program this morning to talk about his meeting with Wellington bureaucrats this week about the gene technology bill from an organic grower's perspective and the ability of regions like Hawke's Bay and Northland to retain their GE-free status under the bill. The bill was published on Parliament's website Tuesday, giving the public the ability to see whether it contains such protection. Scott, thanks for taking time out from, I know you're busy right now, for a chat with us here at RCR.
Thanks, Paul. Yes, we're in the middle of our blueberry harvest. We start in November and finish in May, so we're starting to hit our straps with some great fruit heading into the Christmas week next week. And looking forward to that. Yeah, thank you.
All right. So, interesting to go and meet with the Wellington bureaucrats. Can you tell us about that meeting and that process and how you felt about it, if you don't mind?
Yeah, so I sit on the Aotearoa, Organics Aotearoa New Zealand board, and we felt as though we haven't been asked to the table to share the issues and what how it may affect the organic industry, which is worth near $1 billion in New Zealand on exports and local market production, et cetera, as well, too. So we've been excluded from the discussion of how this may affect our industry as such.
And well, can I just stop you there? We had Judith Collins on, and she pointed to, she was saying as a fact in her mind, that you are a teeny-weeny slice of agriculture in New Zealand, kind of implying back then that maybe you weren't big enough or it wasn't big enough to really think about, just say.
Yeah, I don't think it's fair of Judith Collins to drop us under the bus like that. I think we're a growing sector internationally. The organics industry is a growing sector. We have demand for our products and can return export dollars. And if there, the government has a plan to increase export sales, this is the wrong way to do it. So by undermining us, we have Pāmu, the old Land Corp farms, converting to organic dairy and doing a really good job with it. We have a lot of zestberry kiwi fruit going out, organic wine growers, organic pip fruit. There's a wide range of people that all contribute to NZ's GDP and, importantly, an option for New Zealand consumers to purchase some good food there.
Sorry, I jumped in with that thing about Judith Collins. Carry on with what happened in Wellington with the bureaucrats and the people.
So I was part of the OANZ delegation to Wellington. This is our second visit to Wellington to ask the officials how this may affect our industry because, as I mentioned before, we've been excluded from any discussions. There was industry working groups set up of which the organics industry was excluded from. And so we were blindsided by a few of the things. We met with officials there. Approximately the first meeting was 6 weeks ago, and MB said to us that we will be loaded with unknown costs of segregation, etc., when this bill goes through in relation to coexistence issues.
When you say you, that means the organic farm.
The organic industry, yeah.
Or industry,
so,
yeah.
And it's up. It would, if the bill goes through as proposed, the act, I should say, goes through as proposed, the changes that would be proposed, if there were GE releases in the field, it would be up to all non-GMO producers to prove that they were GMO-free for the exports. And that's a loaded cost, and we can't accept that as a cost with what might be just a minority of growers wishing to use.
So what would be involved in that, Scott, to actually prove? That sounds like potentially quite a high bar.
Well, the similar analogy may be spray drift issues. So all growers that use products have to prove the residue test results as part of our good agricultural practice, our GAP standards. So And the industry that I'm involved in, blueberries and New Zealand blueberries, say that any export has to have a nil residue. So products are tested before we export. So similar analogy is that we would have had to test and prove that we weren't getting GM contamination on our crops from pollen drift, etc. And that is really difficult to do from a cost point of view and an ongoing point of view, and it would be a huge issue to us. There's also big issues in segregating product post-harvest, and whether that's in grains and silos and warehouses and storage, etc. And so the list goes on and on. So this ideology that you can coexist easily is not apparent, and that's shown all around the world that it's the costs are loaded onto the people that that wish to take a stance or take a different stand against it.
It sort of doesn't sound like it's around the right way. So I come along and put a GE-modified crop in, let's say, and it contaminates your organic crop down the line a bit, the wind's blown it, whatever. It's up to you to prove it.
Yes.
Maybe it should be up to me to prove that it's not going to cause any issues.
That's right, Paul. And we've been saying there's some key issues here in this act and this amendment and the proposed changes to our GE rules, which is really slow down, think this issue through a bit more. Let's not just get crushed by some poor thoughtly through regulation. We think it's really missing some key fundamentals of labelling. The consumers need to know if it's labelled. Seeds coming to our country would need to know, are they gene-edited GMO seeds? We currently have the GMO status. It has to be declared. We don't wish to lose that. The gene editing needs to be labelled and declared if seeds have been bred with gene editing or otherwise. So labelling, traceability and liability. And at the moment, the Act and the draft regulations we've seen don't cover off any of that. So
that's because if liability was there, traceability, those things, it wouldn't work, would it? It couldn't happen because none of that can kind of be established in any sort of meaningful, doable way at scale in an industry.
Well, I think the fundamentals for consumer rights and grower rights and business opportunities and it's things that we practice in our businesses all day as food producers, part of our good agricultural practice, our NZ Gap or our Global Gap standards, and we've just completed our Global Gap audit today. It costs us $3,000 a year to do that, just to prove that we're doing things correctly. We have systems in place that have the labelling, traceability, liability, etc. So at a grassroots level on the farm, we're doing this. So why don't we do it at a national level as well too, and government regulation level? It just seems abhorrent that we would accept something without these checks and balances in place.
I guess what I was getting towards is the brave new world of genetics isn't financially viable if you have all those impediments.
I would agree with you. I guess the commercial protagonists of this technology would argue differently. It's definitely a barrier to them releasing their products, their processes and their products, if there are such things as traceability, if there are such things as liability, because it's an unknown science in many parts. It's not precision science, and the old GM science, GM1 we call it, and then we've got GM2s and bits pieces with gene editing. It's highly efficient, but it's not necessarily highly precise. And this is what we need to be aware of in many situations of gene editing, which is the new science, the cisgenics, etc., and these new technologies. There have been mistakes made. There has been foreign DNA introduced into what has said, oh, no, it's just within the same genome. So, but there's people that are more adverse with that than I am. I wish to speak from a grower's point of view. I'm concerned about our seeds. I'm concerned about our viability and what our consumers wish to see. Our consumers in New Zealand, our customers overseas want it labelled, they want traceability, and if something goes wrong, there's going to be some liability. And so those that stand to make the most from selling their technology, they should be standing up and say, yes, we'll be liable if something goes wrong.
They won't do that, though, will they?
No, I don't believe they will. And we see this written in into agreements all around the world that, hey, you, we the biotech companies, wish you to use our technology, but we're not going to take any liability for it. And I think that's wrong.
On the consultation that you didn't have up till now, some of the politicians involved in this have been basically salespeople for, well, the industry, the GMO industry, but also obviously pushing this change in regulation, you know, appearing with white lab coats and all that and sort of like being sales representatives. So that might give some insight into the mindset of the bureaucrats and others who are keenly pushing this. Can you explain to us, or can you give us a reason why they didn't talk to you? Because it's so obvious to talk to you or your group and the industry, and whether they, you know, the impressions of the thinking that you got engaging with them.
Yeah, I think that the biotech companies internationally have been very good at lobbying their science, their IP, to look for a return on their investment. And often things are offered up as a silver bullet, a holy grail to fix things. I think that's the motive there, is a commercial motive by the companies, and that's the reality we face. We live in a commercial world. We also live in a political world, and I think political ideology drives some of this as well too. And when you have political ideology combined with a commercial direction on things without any checks and balances in place, it's not a good future for us to be heading down that track. So it's a real concern to see the fact that the amount of money spent lobbying our politicians, lobbying our officials, that's big business. That's how it works. So we just have to accept that, but we have to stand up and ask for our rights, our fundamental rights we have as consumers, producers, exporters, people that wish to add value to the New Zealand economy. And currently, we are nearest damn it a GMO free country, and we wish to stay that way. We haven't had wild releases of pollen from the crops, the GM crops that are grown overseas, because we don't grow those crops. The crops that are grown overseas with GE are crops that are grown to feed stock, and they're secondary, the maize and the likes of the soya beans and things like that. Some of those products, derivatives of those products, end up in our food supply as well too, but nothing is directly in our food supply. So New Zealand doesn't grow millions of acres of corn for poultry, you know.
Yeah, so what's the use, right? So what is the actual use? What's the planned use? Is it just to establish IP for patent holders? It's also preferential treatment on overseas or global size companies over New Zealand companies. So that's, I think, there's a patriotic dimension to it, actually.
Yes. And I think that the question we need to ask is the question, what is the problem we're trying to solve here? And are there other ways we can solve this? And Owens has been really focused on the food, fibre and environment. That's our focus. The medical discussion, that's another issue for people. That's not our area of expertise. We have many of our members that will be involved in the natural medicines area as well too, but that's our ON's mandate, is the food, fibre and the environment. Let's be clear. Let's be clear on that one. So there is nothing on the horizon that would help us fix our food systems in the near future, et cetera. We see the biotech industry offering these silver bullets to us, but who's going to pay for it? Who's going to own it? Who's going to benefit from it? Will it, as a grower, will it add to my bottom line? Will it add to my profitability? Will it help me make my sales and what is an ever-discerning consumer marketplace? We forget that there's consumers out there, and that's what makes us go around. And we have to be market-led with the right technologies that are consumer accepted as well too. And there is a lot of resistance to the science around the world. the spin that we've seen, and I followed this for 30 years, that we saw the old transgenic type crops that were produced, the maize, the soybean, etc., with a particular trait that was intended for herbicide resistance or insecticide resistance. And now this new technology of gene editing, which is actually not new, it's been around since 1975. What is new is the ability of the CRISPR, the Cas9, etc., these technologies.
You've got to pay to use that, by the way, right? I mean, you can't just, if you want to get a commercial return from the work, you've got to pay them. They own the IP from their, yeah.
They own the patent rights to that technology. So whilst, like, you can practice something in containment and in environment and in a contained environment, I should say, in a laboratory, you can't commercialise that without paying the patent holders for that technology. And my understanding is it's somewhere in the order of $50 million, I think, has been recently published per patent, et cetera, so per license use.
Yeah.
The gene editing has been spun through the media as just like nature can easily be done, et cetera, et cetera. But the way it's done is with these patented processes, and you have to pay for that patented process. So if our New Zealand researchers would wish to use these processes, they will have to pay up, which is us as taxpayers have to pay up, and then there'll be pressure on them to earn some money from that as IP rights themselves as well too. So does the end consumer win on this? Does the environment win on this? Do the farmers win on this? I don't see anything that we should rush into that says we're missing out.
Yeah, just coming up against time. The rush bit, as everyone's noticing the rush, like a big time rush.
The only thing we can consider as it's a big rush is that Judith Collins said that it was in her election mandate to get it done. And so if this takes more than one election cycle, it may not get done in the way that she would like to see it framed in the current act, the way it's proposed. So perhaps that's what's driving it. It's certainly, we're not leaving any money on the table for our New Zealand food producers. There's no rush for New Zealand food producers to grab it or our exporters. So we can't see. So it could only be a political drive there to get it done. And she's saying she had the mandate to do that in the election. So,
well, that's being held hostage to, an ego or egos or something.
Yes, I don't know enough about that to comment. I just see that the officials that we've talked to are feeling flustered, feeling rushed. That's the type of feedback we're getting. Because remembering this act goes across many different ministries of MB, MFE, MPI, and a huge issue crossing over with our FSANS regulations as well too, through the definitions of what is GE and what are the labelling requirements here as well too. And MB has said from the start that it's going to be loosely based on Australian regulations. Well, we see it being very loose and more liberal than the US, which has a huge litigation industry and the public eye that has these checks and balances in place as well too. So we just don't wish to see anything as liberal as what is currently proposed in the draft act that we've only seen in the last day or two. So there's a lot to go through yet, Paul, and there's a lot of detail and a lot of unanswered questions, and we need to ask who's really pushing this.
Yeah, that's a very good question, isn't it? Very good question. Whoever's pushing it has enough power to get the Prime Minister and the Attorney General, Minister of Justice, Defence, Science and Technology, and the leader of the ACT Party in a white coat in a lab pushing it.
Yes, and to be fair to those politicians, I'm not sure they fully understand the deeper concept of things. They'll take snippets out of it that they think will work for them, and need to get some things across the line. But As a food producer, I'm really concerned about our food security in New Zealand, our energy security as well too. And I don't see this helping any of that. As vegetable seeds in New Zealand, we're relying on imported seeds to come into New Zealand. So with those imported seeds, what's the background of that? What's the technology that's being used there? Are there controls, regulations and balance for that as well too? Our ON's delegation visits to Wellington are giving us a lot more questions than answers. And we come away with a bigger to-do list than we went down with, for sure. So, and that's coming across from all the different political parties we speak to, from the different officials we speak to and the different ministries we speak to. There's a lot of concern out there, and there's a lot of learning to be done by all of us.
Well, there'll be submissions made next year. There'll be an opportunity for that. I guess it comes down to awareness, doesn't it? People need to know what this kind of means, not just at the level, because you mentioned medical before. That's what's used to sell it. It's like medical breakthroughs and innovations that could save lives. That's talked about quite a bit. But we've looked around. We can't find anything, any miracle cure or silver bullet, as you said before, that would indicate that. But that's what pleases people to hear. So people just have to be aware, don't they, and sort of go hard on submitting and inboxes to various key politicians, etc. What else can you think of?
Yes, we need to have the discussion, and I think the discussion has been very short to date. We had the last big discussion we had, this was a Royal Commission over 20 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
That said, proceed with caution, and we seem to be throwing caution out the wind. So it's not where we want to be going. As food producers, we need to be aware of what new technologies may help us as food producers, what may be acceptable to our customers, what may or may not affect the environment in a positive or negative way. We need to be aware of these technologies, and I don't think all the growers really fully understand that yet.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
When you talk to grower groups like I'm associated with Horticulture New Zealand, there are some growers that would really like to use this technology, and there's other growers that are saying, hey, put the brakes on, we don't know enough about this, we're really concerned. So it's not a very simple argument at all, and we need to tease that discussion out a bit more. And I'm sure it's the same in the beef and lamb and the Fonterra camps and the Zespri camps. Everywhere we go into these parts of our industry, there's people that are for it and people that are against it and people that are sitting on the fence. So surely if people are sitting on the fence for things, then that says let's stop, let's slow down, think this through.
All right, Scott Lawson, True Earth Certified Organic Blueberries in the Hawke's Bay, also on the board of ON's Organic Aotearoa New Zealand and Hawke's Bay Future Farming Trust. Thanks for coming on, Scott. Really interesting, really informative.
Thanks, Paul, and thanks for sharing this awareness on your platform as well too. Really appreciate that. Thank you.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas, from great-looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.